Hi, I'm Sam Broadfoot QC.
And I'm David Locke QC.
And we are barristers at Landmark Chambers. Welcome back to our short series on police pensions law, where our aim is to provide an overview of the law on police pensions, divided into bite-sized chunks as a series of podcasts. As an overview, however, our remarks should not be taken as legal advice for anyone's individual situation, since our discussions are pitched in quite a general way in order to give listeners a feel for how the scheme works. The answer in any individual case may well depend on particular details, and we can't consider the multitude of different cases in this sort of series. If anyone has a question about a person's entitlement, then we strongly advise you to seek specific legal advice. Having said that, we welcome any feedback from anyone who thinks we might have got something wrong in our overview.
Yes, that's right, Sam. The schemes are complex, the legislation is confusing, and lawyers who have worked in this area for many years don't always agree on what police officers are entitled to. So please provide any feedback, because we'll try and get the details right, but we're always happy to be corrected if we get anything wrong.
Okay, well, this is episode 2, and we are very grateful to Amy Jansen, who has edited and produced this recording. In our first podcast, we set out some of the background to police pensions and introduced the four different types of pensions that a police officer may be entitled to: ordinary pension, deferred pension, ill health pension, and injury pension. We talked about the statutory duty on the Chief Constable to make decisions under the pension schemes, and the potential for conflicts of interest between her statutory duty and her operational functions. In this episode, we're going to try to explain the basic features of the three police pension schemes, set out how officers have been moved from one scheme to another, and look forward to the choices that officers are likely to be going to have to make who have been forcibly and unlawfully moved out of the 1987 or 2006 scheme into the 2015 scheme, as well as how they are going to be offered the chance to move back into the original scheme in the coming months. If that all sounds complicated, well, bear with us and we'll try and plot a course through the maze. So let's start at the beginning. What is the legislation that allows the Secretary of State to make police pension schemes in the first place?
The basic legislation is the Police Pensions Act 1976. This allows the Secretary of State to make regulations to set up police pension schemes for serving police officers. But before making or changing any pension scheme, the Secretary of State has to consult representatives of both police officers and representatives of the forces. And this is now done through the Police Advisory Board for England and Wales. This is the body that replaced the Police Negotiating Board in 2014. And once the consultation is completed, the Secretary of State makes new regulations and, if by magic, a new police pension scheme is created.
As if by magic. But the creation of a new scheme doesn't automatically mean that the previous police pension scheme is redundant, does it? As we explained in the first podcast, officers who have acquired rights under the previous scheme keep those rights. However, there are complicated transition provisions which mean that, depending on the terms of the new scheme, officers on an old scheme may or may not be able to carry on as members of the old scheme and keep acquiring new pension rights under that scheme. We will have a look at how it works as we look at each scheme. So, there are three schemes: 1987, 2006 and 2015. So let's start with the first one, the 1987 scheme. David, what are the main features of that scheme?
Well, the Police Pensions Regulations 1987 created the 1987 Police Pension Scheme. Now, these regulations remain in force and serving officers and pensioners can look to enforce their rights under the scheme. There are a number of different types of pension that a police officer can become entitled to under the 1987 regulations. First of all, a short service award for those who serve under 5 years. Secondly, an ordinary pension. Thirdly, a deferred pension. And finally, an ill health pension. And the original 1987 regulations also contain the provisions for injury pensions, but these are now in a new set of regulations. We explain the differences between these types of pensions in the previous podcast. There's an accurate guide to the rights of members under the 1987 scheme published by the government. The details are set out in the guide, which accompanies this series of podcasts, and it's easy to find by Googling Police Pension Scheme 1987. However, in general terms, the 1987 scheme is a 60th APP final salary scheme.
Hold on. What on earth is a 60th APP final salary scheme? Can you set that out in language that everyone can understand, and let's strip out the jargon?
Sorry, Sam. The pensions world has its own jargon, just like the medical world, the legal world, and indeed the police service. So there are three elements to that definition. First, APP stands for average pensionable pay. There are three elements to that definition. First, APP. This stands for average pensionable pay. The average pensionable pay of an officer is the salary and allowances that are paid to a serving officer in a single year. Some payments, such as overtime, are not pensionable pay, but other payments, such as allowances, are generally part of pensionable pay.
And can you explain what is an allowance?
An allowance is an additional sum of money which is paid to a police officer for taking on a specific task, such as the allowance which are paid to officers in charge of police dogs. And this allowance pays them for kennelling the dogs at home and exercising them during periods when they're off duty.
Right. So in summary, a person who is entitled to a generous allowance becomes entitled to a higher pension, but not someone who does a lot of overtime.
That's right. Although, to make matters slightly more complicated, there was a case about firefighters last year which said that regular scheduled overtime was required to be treated as pensionable pay, and it's not yet clear whether that ruling will apply to police officers. So, that's another area where the law is not entirely clear. Moving on, the second part of the element of the definition is that this pension scheme under 1987 regulations is a final salary scheme. This means that the pension is paid by reference to a proportion of the average pensionable pay in the final year of an officer's service, or the best of the last 3 years. And lastly, it's a 60th scheme. A 60th scheme means that for each complete year an officer works, the officer acquires an ordinary or deferred pension based on a payment of 1/60th of his APP in the final salary, as a pension payable in the first year of retirement. So if the officer earns £60,000 in his final year of service, he gets a pension of £1,000 per year for each completed year of service. So if he did 20 years, his pension becomes £20,000 a year. But the 1987 scheme provides that for the years between 20 and 30 years service count double. So an officer who serves 30 years gets 40/60ths as his pension, in this case £40,000 a year. Pensions are payable from the date of retirement, then they get uprated each year for inflation in accordance with the mechanism under the Pension Increases Act 1971.
So how much they are entitled to under the 1987 scheme, what is the best first place to look?
Well, other than the case of ill health retirement, where we look at the issues detail in later podcasts, or entitlement to injury pension, which again we'll look at, I would suggest that officers or their federation reps look to the guide to the 1987 police pension scheme, which is published by the government and which is available on the internet.
Yes. Now, of course, police officers who started their police service after April 2006 were not able to join the 1987 scheme. By that stage, the government had made a new set of regulations which brought in a new pension scheme, known as the New Police Pension Scheme, or NPPS. Did the 2006 scheme apply to all police officers after April 2006?
No. Although some attempt was made to persuade officers to transfer from the 1987 scheme to the 2006 scheme, officers had the right to stay in the 1987 scheme and continue to acquire rights under that scheme, even though the new scheme being brought in April 2006. And quite rightly, they were given advice that the 1987 scheme was a better overall pension scheme. And so the vast majority of police officers who were members of the 1987 scheme stayed as scheme members of the 87 scheme after the new pension scheme came in 2006. Thus, between 2006 and 2015, police officers were accumulating pensions under one or other of the schemes, but not both.
Right, so if someone is acting as a detective to try and work out where to start sorting out someone's pension entitlement, the first question is, whether or not the officer began service before or after April 2006.
Yes, that's right. Before April 2006, the officer is likely to be in the 87 scheme. Anyone joining the service after April 2006 can only be a member of the 2006 scheme.
OK, so what are the main features of the 2006 scheme?
Well, once again, for anyone other than an ill health retired officer or an injury pension officer, the best place to look for a description of the 2006 scheme is the government guide, which is published on the internet. However, in broad terms, the scheme worked as follows. For every year of pensionable service, gives an officer an entitlement to a pension of 1/70th of final pay, up to a limit of 35/70ths, or half your pay. The earliest date that a pension can be paid is 55, up from 50 under the 87 scheme. 35 years service is needed for a maximum pension of 50% of your average pensionable pay. A maximum pension is an annual payment of half of the final pay, plus an automatic tax-free lump sum of up to four times the annual pension. And final pay can take account of pay in up to 10 years prior to retirement, if that would give you a bigger pension.
Okay, so although there is a lump sum payment as well, overall that seems less generous than the 1987 scheme. I did some quick maths using the same example of a final salary of £60,000 a year and 30 years service, in the same way that you set out under the 1987 scheme, in order to get a feel for the difference. So under the 1987 scheme, the officer would have a pension of £40,000 a year. Under the 2006 scheme, the maths work out broadly at £25,700 a year plus a lump sum of approximately £103,000. So although the lump sum makes up for some of the loss, it all depends on how long the person draws a pension for. Now, the actuarial calculations are way beyond my ability, but on a very rough arithmetical basis, that lump sum difference would be eroded within 7 years. So it would appear to be less generous for most people.
That's right. But the contribution levels required from individual officers were also slightly lower. One way of looking at the real value of a pension scheme is to estimate the cumulative value of all the benefits across all the police officers and members of the scheme, and then determine that value in relation to the pay of police officers generally. A 2020 House of Commons briefing paper refers to government estimates which suggested that the value of the 1987 scheme represented about 33% of the pay of the average police officer. The 2006 scheme represented benefits equal to about 29% of the pay of the average police officer, and the 2015 scheme represented benefits to 24% of the pay. The officers were making contributions out of their salary between 9% and 15%, but even with the changes made in 2006, being a member of the pension scheme made financial sense for virtually all officers.
Okay, so then what happened in 2015?
Well, all changes to public sector pension schemes are hugely politically contentious, and therefore a considerable amount of work is done by any government before changes are proposed. And in 2013, Lord John Hutton, the former Labour MP for Barrow, produced a report for the government which suggested substantial changes to public sector schemes, largely because they were becoming unaffordable because people were living so long, which is a great thing, but equally is an enormous cost to the pension scheme. It was hugely contentious, but it provided a framework for major changes across a wide range of public sector pension schemes. Hence, new regulations were made to change the pension scheme for NHS workers, judges, firefighters, and a big range of public sector workers. Now, very few people agreed with those changes, but this was a period when the government was claiming austerity, and the mantra was that hard decisions had to be made. And as part of that process, the police pension scheme was changed and the new 2015 scheme was brought in by the Police Pensions Regulations 2015.
Once again, the full details are set out in the government guide to the scheme, which is published by the Home Office and also available on the internet. However, other public sector schemes moved from a final salary scheme to a care scheme, where CARE stands for Career Average Revalued Earnings Scheme, and the age at which pensions became payable has been moved back into other schemes. Did this happen with the police scheme as well?
Yes. Instead of pension based on the final salary of a police officer, the pension was now based on career revalued average earnings. Now, bearing in mind that most officers rise through the ranks and therefore earn their highest salary in their last years of service, the pension based on average earnings, albeit that earnings in later years are adjusted to take account of inflation, delivers a much lower pension. You're also right that the age at which the pension was payable was put back. The normal pension age under the 2015 scheme is 60, and the minimal pension age is 55.
So in very broad terms, under the 2015 scheme, a person's CARE is calculated, which is obviously likely to be considerably lower than their final salary, and then this figure is divided by 55.3 instead of 60 or 70 under the earlier schemes, and then multiplied by the number of years of service?
In broad terms, yes, that's right, and it's hugely complicated.
Okay, I suppose it also makes it very difficult to calculate because of the way the CARE figure has to be reached.
Yes, in broad terms, that's right. The pension scheme moved to a scheme based on 55.3 years as opposed to 60 or 70, but that was more than offset by the fact that it was a CARE scheme rather than a final salary scheme.
Right, okay. So what happened about police officers who were in the 1987 or the 2006 schemes when the later police pension scheme came in? This is where it gets a bit messy, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. Many apologies in advance. This is where it gets really complicated. The problem for the government was it wouldn't have achieved the savings it wanted as quickly as it wanted if police officers were allowed to continue to accumulate new pension rights under the 1987 or 2006 schemes. So a policy decision was made for police officers, just as it was made for judges and firefighters, that most members of the 1987 and 2006 scheme would not be able to acquire new pension rights under those schemes, but would have to transfer to the 2015 scheme and acquire new pension rights after April 2015 under that scheme. So in broad terms, their existing accumulated rights under the 1987 scheme and 2006 schemes were preserved, but the principle was that most officers should move to the 2015 scheme and then acquire new pension rights under this scheme for any service after April 2015.
And most police officers, now this is the nub of the problem, isn't it? So does that mean that some police officers were able to stay in the 1987 or 2006 schemes and carry on accumulating pension rights under those schemes after April 2015?
Yes, that's right. Members of the 1987 or 2006 scheme were divided into protected members, broadly those who were within 10 years of retirement in 2012, and this group continued to be able to accrue future rights under the 1987 or 2006 scheme. Then secondly, tapered members, who were only able to continue to acquire rights under their existing schemes for a defined period, then had to transfer to the 2015 scheme. And unprotected members, who were unable to acquire any new rights under the 2006 scheme or 1987 scheme after April 2015. Hence, unprotected members of the 1987 or 2006 schemes were automatically became members of the 2015 scheme and could only acquire new pension rights after April 2015 under that scheme.
Yes, I'm aware that this happened in other schemes as well. So that set of arrangements benefited older police officers who were nearer retirement, but the benefit of staying in the old scheme was denied to younger police officers. And didn't that raise a problem of age discrimination?
Yes, that's right. That was essentially the problem. This was arguably not direct discrimination because the cut-off was not based on the officer's age, but it was indirect discrimination because it deprived younger officers of the benefit that was able to be acquired by older police officers namely continuing in a more generous pension scheme.
But, as we both know, indirect age discrimination can be justified as long as the discrimination is for proper purposes and is proportionate. There was a case about this, wasn't there, about judicial pensions called McLeod and others against Ministry of Justice.
That's right. This was a test case about whether the same sort of transition provisions were lawful or not, involving judges and firefighters, with both groups of those public sector workers being subject to similar arrangements. The case was brought in the Employment Tribunal, and the Tribunal ruled the transition provisions constituted unlawful age discrimination, and this could not be justified. The government appealed to the Court of Appeal but lost, and it was refused permission to go to the Supreme Court, and therefore the transition provisions in the judicial and firefighters' pension schemes were determined to be unlawful.
And presumably police officers would seek to argue that the same logic and reasoning applied to them as well.
That's right. A large group of police officers, about 13,000, also commenced proceedings in the Employment Tribunal, but that case was stayed to await the decision in the case involving judges and firefighters. And the government has now accepted, for the purpose of those proceedings, the same arguments apply to the police pension scheme, and therefore has accepted that changes have to be made to the police pension scheme to allow anybody who was forcibly transferred from the 1987 or 2006 scheme back into the 2015 scheme and thus be able to rejoin the scheme from which they were rejected.
Well, that's a very good result for members then, isn't it? Since otherwise there would no doubt have been lots of litigation about whether those who had not joined the original police action were out of time to bring a complaint.
Yes, it was probably too late for officers to start a new action. But as the government didn't want to encourage multiple litigation across all affected pension schemes, it's now provided a clear assurance that reforms will be made and they will apply to all relevant public sector pension schemes, and that includes the police scheme.
Those changes haven't been made yet, though, have they? Do you know when they are expected?
That's right. The government has delayed making the new regulations while it consulted, which is perfectly appropriate. And now it's taken a long time to think about the consultation responses. And it's said that it will bring in regulations to bring this change about, even though the overall cost to the government across all the public sector pension schemes is thought to be about £4 billion. The problem is that no date has been given as to when these new changes will come into effect. But they'll start directly affecting many police officers in 2022, because the original provisions protecting police officers were those who were within 10 years of retirement in 2012. However, some police officers are already affected by these changes, and there are some issues about how their cases are dealt with.
Yes, and do we know the nature of the changes? For example, do we know whether the government is likely to simply accept that all officers forcibly moved out of the 1987 or 2006 scheme might be able to rejoin their earlier scheme, as opposed to only those within a number of years of retirement? Or could they meet the discrimination argument some other way, such as by winding up the earlier schemes for everybody?
I don't think it's possible for the government to entirely wind up the 1987 or 2006 schemes, because there have been protected members who gained benefits under those schemes and protected from the 2015 schemes. But it seems to me that at the very least, they have to allow police officers to transfer back into their original scheme until at least a future date when nobody can gain future rights under those schemes. However, it may be simply too expensive for the government to allow anyone who was under the 87 or 2006 schemes to continue accruing benefits under those schemes for the rest of their careers, although that's no doubt what the trade unions and other employee representatives will be pushing the government to do. So it's likely that the schemes will not be wound up, but there will be an end date to the point at which anyone can acquire new rights under those schemes.
Yes, I wondered about that too, especially given the economic outlook as a result of the pandemic. But assuming that it is then still the intention to allow people to make a choice, and that when the regulations are made, police officers moved out of the earlier scheme will have to decide which scheme to go into or go back to, Do we know how the regulations will deal with the fact that contribution rates were higher under the old schemes?
No, this is one of the issues which is not clear yet. But if the new regulations take effect from, say, April 2021, which may be optimistic, there could be up to 6 years of underpaid contributions which police officers will need to fund in order to move back into an old scheme. Now, it's one thing to pay pension contributions as you go along, but it's another to be asked for 6 years' payment of part of the contributions out of your current salary.
Yes, quite.
Although the payment will only, of course, be the difference between the contribution rates, not the full contribution rates, but that could be up to about 5% of salary. So the price of being able to return to the original pension scheme might be that officers will have to pay out several months' salary, although hopefully this may be spread over a number of years.
Yes, I can see that these will be very difficult decisions for officers, but I suppose we don't need to worry about them quite yet. At the moment, officers' pension rights depend on identifying which scheme they are in, which can raise a host of quite difficult legal questions, especially for some people who would have been captured by the forcible transfer to the 2015 scheme.
Yes, up to a point, but I'm afraid there's one more potential complication. Under the Equality Act, scheme managers of occupational pension schemes, and that includes the police scheme, are required to apply a non-discrimination rule. And that takes precedence over any of the rules of the scheme. And there's an interesting legal argument that individual chief officers are in fact required to correct any age discrimination provisions, even if this means that they have to rewrite the rules of a pension scheme, which is made by regulations. Now, that's an area for really specialist legal advice. But in summary, there's a strange quirk in the implementation of the Equality Act, which seems to require chief constables to make changes to the police pension scheme because it prevents them being able to rely on discriminatory provisions contained within regulations when those discriminatory provisions are age discrimination. And at this point, it's tempting to say that it all gets too difficult and I should put a wet towel over my head and disappear into a corner and think about something more constructive. But for any affected police officers who are presently wanting to move back to their previous scheme, this is an area which may need some examination in detail.
Well, thank you for leaving us on that note, David. And that's it for episode 2. This podcast is accompanied by chapter 2 of David's guide, which is available on the Landmark Chambers website on www.landmarkchambers.co.uk. In the next podcast, we will look at ill health retirements and the pensions which become payable to police officers whose state of health means they cannot carry on with the full range of duties needed to be a police officer. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you will join us again next time.